Just taping it. And we're just going to go 1, 2, 3, 4. Just taping 1. Okay.
My song is about to take 3.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Scene from Rocky, Gonna Fly Now. You all know that song. It was co-written by a real live teddy bear. Her name was Annette Kleinbard. She then changed it professionally to Carol Connors. I have Annette and Carol both on the phone, and it is my pleasure to say welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ronnie. Thank you very much. They're both my names. I have not changed my name legally on many things because my mother and father really were quite adamant about me keeping Annette Kleinbard. But I am, I hope, known as Carol Connors. Bill Conti, myself, and Ann Robbins wrote the theme from Rocky.
I introduced you as a real live teddy bear because back in 1958, you recorded a song that has become... what's the word? It's kind of legendary. It's part of the American culture. I think just about everybody in the world seems to know the song, To Know Him Is to Love Him. And when they think of the song, To Know Him Is to Love Him, they think of your rendition of it as part of the Teddy Bears.
Well, I was the lead singer, the voice of the Teddy Bears, you might say. It didn't start out that way, but that's how it ended up, because Phil Spector wrote the song for my voice. His father committed suicide, and on his father's epitaph, it said, to know him was to love him. And Phil fell in love with my voice. He was going with my girlfriend, Donna, and we were in junior high school in 1958. Now everybody can compute my age. He said, I'm going to write a song for your voice. And he did after we cut the first cut in the recording studio.
I have heard a rumor that To Know Him Is to Love Him was not even intended to be the A side.
It wasn't at the time, because when Phil came to me, because he had heard me sing, and he said, do you have $10? I went, $10? I don't have 10 cents. What are you talking about? I'm in junior high school. I can't even get an ice cream cone. What are you talking about? We were very poor at the time. And he said, well, if you can get the $10 together, you can come cut a record with us. So I went to my mom and dad, and I said, may I have $10? And my mother said, go do your homework. But my father was a bit of a gambling man. He had been a jockey, not a disc jockey, but a jockey, ones that ride horses. And he said, Gail, let's listen to her. So I said, look, if you give me the $10, we're going to go in, we're going to cut a record, we're going to be rich, we're going to live in a mansion, all your dreams are going to come true, I'm going to have the number one record in the world, and Daddy, I'm going to buy you a racehorse. And he went, Anetula, that's what he used to call me. He said, I don't want a racehorse, but let me try and talk your mom into the $10. And they gave me the $10, and we went into the recording studio, and we cut Don't You Worry, My Little Pet, which was the side that we all thought was just the greatest. Now, when I look back on it, I think it's probably one of the worst songs ever written. But at that time, it was just fabulous. And my voice kept shining through, because I was the only girl. It was the boys and myself, and I kept going, I'll think of you. And that's when the bell must have gone off really in Phil's head. And about 2 weeks later, he did write a song for my voice. Okay.
Before we get to the one that he wrote for your voice, let's acknowledge the other member. The Teddy Bears were a trio, and it was yourself, and at that time you were Annette Kleinbard, and Phil Spector, of course. And who was the third teddy bear?
It was a wonderful, wonderful friend of Phil's and became a great friend of mine, of course. They were in school together. They were ahead of me. His name was Marshall Lee, and he passed away about 3 years, and it really broke my heart. It's like he took my youth with me, if you know what I mean, because he was always there. He was a real good guy. He was a mensch, as we would say. Phil and Marshall were like big brothers to me because I was so young, and I was in school at the time.
You were born in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. I certainly was.
Born in 19...
That's right, we're not going to say. There's so many different stories about the year I was born that, as Zsa Zsa Gabor once said to me, and I will never forget this, she said, "Carol, darling, if a woman will tell you her age, she will tell you anything. Therefore, I tell everybody nothing. End of story. I ain't talking."
We're going to let our audience hear a little bit of the song that was intended to be the A side. If you listen carefully, you'll hear Annette's voice popping up now and then, right?
That's right.
Here it is, a little bit of "Don't You Worry, My Little Pet." Don't you worry, my little pet. For some reason, I always want to put the word pretty in there. I always want to make it my pretty little pet, but it was just my little pet.
Yes, because it went, "Don't you worry, my little pet."
Bum, bum, bum.
You know, et cetera, et cetera.
All right.
It was one of the first songs that Phil ever wrote. And I mean, from him to go to that, to this beautiful teenage lament that he wrote, the middle was taken from a Wagnerian opera, you know, da-da-da-da-da-dee-dee-da-da-da, very complicated.
Wow. Now, that's a bit of trivia that I bet a lot of people don't know.
Not know, but they know it now.
Phil actually wrote this song for his father, but he also wrote it for you.
But he turned it into a teenage lament. He said, "What do you think about it?" He called me when I was, as my mother was thrilled, doing my homework, and the phone rang, and it was Phil. And he said, "What do you think? What do you think?" And his voice was carrying, "No, no, no." And Phil did not have the greatest voice on the planet. And I said, "Well, I guess it's okay." He said, "Well, be here tomorrow. We have to rehearse. And then we're going to the recording studio, and we're going to present this song, too." I said, "But Phil, I can't get up there." And because they lived far from me. And he said, "Take the bus." And he hung up the phone.
All I could say is I'm glad he didn't sing the lead singing on this. I don't think it would have had the impact.
I think so is the rest of the world, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But he did do, it went to, "No, no, 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 no," just as "no, no, 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 no," and I do, "Da, da, 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 da." That was Phil's voice.
That was Phil's. I was wondering.
Yeah, that was Phil.
I love this record.
And Thank you.
This is the 50th anniversary.
I just did a doo-wop show, and, you know, so many people were, like, crying and freaking out in front of me over it, and I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, because I'm so into things I'm doing today that I very rarely look back.
These are the Teddy Bears with the lead singing of Annette Kleinbard.
At the time.
To know him is to love him. know him is to love him. Those were the Teddy Bears. And I'm talking to the lead teddy bear on that record. I am living out a dream right now. Because
oh, you're so sweet.
I loved that song. It's been recorded by some other people. Some of you may remember that Bobby Vinton did a recording of it. And most recently, Amy Winehouse did a version of it.
Yes, which is a very interesting version of it. I'm not saying this out of any conceit. I really am not. But sometimes in life, I feel there is a definitive sound or a definitive record or a definitive poem or whatever. I feel that all the stars were aligned on that day when we recorded it. And it really is the definitive version of that song.
I agree. Is it true that the session was one of these El Cheapo sessions, so to speak?
I don't think you could have gotten any cheaper. I mean, considering I coughed up $10, and
yeah.
Marshall coughed up the $10. I think we went over a little budget by about $20.
It was about $75.
Well, maybe around there. You know, I was so young. I sang it in 20 minutes. It was a two-track machine. It was a gold star. Stan Ross was the engineer. Sandy Nelson played drums on it. First thing he ever played drums. And it's a wonderful, wonderful drum riff. It really is.
Oh, it is. Everything. Everything works.
You know, it really worked. We were done in 20 minutes because, remember, we were spending our own money for the recording session, and we collectively did not have a lot of money at the time.
Right. After you did the recording session, did Phil think that the A side was still the other side, or did he start to say, well, maybe this one should be the A side?
Phil had no control over it. We were just little peons who had recorded the tune. We took it to the record company. Lou Bedell and Stan Newman, they were cousins, and they had owned Era Records, which was the big company, and Dory, D-O-R-E, I think it's number 503, or it became their subsidiary. It was a greenish label with a feather, and this was the record that came out on it.
And it was Dory 503.
Was I right?
You're absolutely right. You got two gold stars for that. We're going to play a little bit of the follow-up record, which is called Wonderful Lovable You, and that came out on Dory as well?
Yes, because we only did four sides. That's all we ever did for Dory. And then we left him.
Maybe some people in our audience remember Wonderful Lovable You.
I kissed you one, and I knew. Your lips were warm, your lips were true. Oh, 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 I love you so. Wonderful, wonderful, lovable.
Wonderful, lovable you, the Teddy Bears.
What happened was we cut the four songs at those two recording sessions, and we walked out, and as you can tell, obviously I was not the lead singer of the group at the time, because I didn't sing lead until To Know Him Is to Love Him.
Right.
Because Wonderful, Lovable You, I had a really pretty little wonderful, wonderful, lovable, lovable. I answered the boys, and on Don't You Worry My Little Pet, I did my little bit, and then there was one other song. I can't think of the name of it. And then To Know Him Is to Love Him. That was it. I wasn't Annette, the lead singer of the Teddy Bears, but the song became the hit. It was the one that became the monster. We did leave. We left right away, and we went over to Imperial, to Lou Judd, and we did an entire album. And then, of course, everybody knew that I was the lead singer. I think I sang lead on most of the songs, if not all of them. But the songs had a different feel than To Know Him. Phil had written some very dark songs. I mean, they weren't like this beautiful, sweet teenage lament. He sort of went into a darker place on some of the songs. And I didn't like all of the songs, but I didn't have a lot to say about it at the time.
There is a song that several people have asked me to play during the show because they like it, and it's called Oh Why. I'm going to play a little bit of it.
Oh,
Annette wasn't crazy about that song.
I wasn't. As soon as we released Oh Why, in fact, there was another song on that album. If you only knew of the love I have for you, blah, blah, blah. But the Oh Why, I think, was the single.
Oh, actually, but, If You Only Knew was a subsequent single. Actually,
right, but Oh Why came out, and they canceled. And Dory, who was furious that we left, then released Wonderful, Lovable You, which started to climb up the chart.
Yeah, right on top
of it. It got to number 40 or something.
Yeah, and then right on top of it. So you got two things out, and they
And they blew each other out of the
chart. They blow each other away.
I must say that working with Jimmy Haskell, which I ended up working with years later, and was nominated for an Emmy together, he was really wonderful. Wonderful, Lovable You, because he was very kind. But Phil was so into becoming Phil at the time, he really sort of ramshot over everything.
Right.
But Jimmy was very cautious and did some beautiful arrangements. It's not that I didn't like the songs. I just think that they weren't of the greatness of To Know Him Is to Love Him.
I am Ronnie Allen talking with Annette Kleinbard, who right now is going to become Carol Connors.
Overnight.
Why the name change, and when did it happen?
It's sort of a very sweet little story. I grew up under Annette Funicello's ears, you might say. So when I was going to school, I was like a 32-minus Trainer A bra, okay? Annette Funicello. Now, you've got to visualize this. She was on the Mickey Mouse Club with Cheryl. They were the two, like, main. In fact, Cheryl, the girl today that was the counterpart to Annette, is one of my dearest friends. She went from a whatever to a 36D overnight because she grew, right? She became a woman, a girl,
yeah, right.
A teenager. And the bottom line is the boys in school, when I was in my gym clothes, would come up to me and they would put their fingers like ears, you know, make ears on top of their head. They would look at my poor little chest and they would go, "Why aren't your ears growing, Annette?" And I hated the name Annette because of that.
Oh.
That's why I changed it. There was only one Annette, and that was Annette Funicello, and I had been kidded all those years in school. So I went, "I don't like this name," and that's why I changed it.
You changed it to Carol Connors, and sometimes you're known as Cece.
Right, and who knew that there would be a gazillion Connors out there? I mean, from Mike Connors to Sandra Day O'Connor to Carol O'Connor once had the best story. He said to me, "Carol, I am so sick and tired of being congratulated for your Oscar."
Yeah, your name
and
sounds
so sad. I said, "Carol, how do you think I feel? I think I'm Archie Bunker."
Oh, sure.
And then, you know, there's actually a porno queen. Her name is Carol Connor. She spells it differently. So I can't get away from all these Connors no matter where I go.
By the way, Glenn Miller plays. There is life after being a teddy bear.
Yes.
Your next major musical life was as a songwriter of a top 10 hit for a group called the Ripcords.
Absolutely. After To Know Him, I was dating this wonderful man, and he had a beautiful car called an AC Bristol, and I sort of cracked up the front. So he said, "Why don't you go talk to Carol Shelby? There's this guy named Carol Shelby, and he's making these new cars, and they're called Cobras, but it's really a Bristol, which is an English car.
Mm-hmm.
So see if he can put a Bristol front on a Cobra back or whatever." So I went out there to El Segundo, and I went in. I had on my little hip huggers and my little crop top, and he loved To Know Him Is to Love Him. So I got to have a meeting with him, and he said to me, "If you write a song about my car and it goes to number one, I'll give you a Cobra." Well, bottom line is, I went home and I wrote Hey Little Cobra with my brother Marshall, who was very young but was very car savvy at the time. But it's really a sort of tongue-in-cheek song. Brian Wilson always said to me, "I knew it was written by a girl." And I went, "Well, Brian, how did you know that?" He said, "Well, you can't take a car out of gear and let it coast to the line. You can't do that." "Oh, yes, you can." I mean, we used to have big arguments over it. But what happened was, we wrote the song. I took it to Terry Melcher, who was the A&R at Columbia Records, and he put together the group. They went in, they recorded it. It became number one. It's considered one of the most important hot rod songs ever written. One of the reasons is because, according to Lee Iacocca, who was the head of Ford Performance at the time, he said that that little girl gave Ford Motor Company millions and millions and millions of dollars of free advertising. And it then, on top of everything else, was the forerunner to the GT40, which won Le Mans. the one thing the Americans were never able to do was build a production car that could win Le Mans. And we won Le Mans based on the song being the forerunner to the GT40, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Hey, little Cobra, don't you know you're gonna shut them down? I took my Cobra down to the track, hitched to the back of my Cadillac. Everyone was there just waiting for me. There were plenty of Stingrays and XKs. You know you're gonna shut them down. When the flag went down, you could hear a burn. The Stingray had me going into the turn. I hung a big shift and I got to the high. And when I flew by the Stingray, I waved bye-bye. Cobra, don't you know you're gonna shut them down? Around the car turned in a straight away. I was blowing off everything that got in my way. The Stingrays and Jags were so far behind. I took my Cobra out of gear and let it coast to the line. You know you're gonna shut them down. Shut them down. Shut them down. Shut them down. Shut them down.
In spite of what Brian Wilson said about the song, most people couldn't tell. I mean, he must have known a lot about cars.
Well, he was a car aficionado.
Okay, so he was
if
a car.
The 409 and yeah. All those songs. He knew everything about cars.
Okay.
They were fanatics.
Right. But you didn't change any of the words, right? You just left them the way they were?
He said that after it became such a hit.
Oh, okay, so...
So by then I was going to the bank.
Okay.
Finally.
And I bet you...
We didn't make very much off To Know Him Is to Love Him, trust me.
But you made a lot over... Hey, you made a lot with Hey Little Cobra, I'm sure.
And thank goodness for all the others that came after.
Yeah. I don't care what Brian says. He probably absolutely loved the song. Totally.
He probably did.
He wished he wrote it himself. I bet, I bet, I bet. Going to move right along now to the one that opened the show in excerpted form. Going to fly now, the theme from Rocky. And how did that one come about?
Boy,
was that a toughie? Let me.
I'm trying to...
don't worry, take your time.
Bill Conti and Robbins and I had the same agent, and he said, there's a little film being done. It's about a boxer, and there's not much money in the budget. The whole budget of Rocky was $980,000, the entire budget of the film.
That's cheap,
so
by the way.
My father had loved boxing, so I went to my dad, and I said, Dad, I've just been asked to do this film. It's about a boxer named Rocky. And my father said, oh, yeah, Rocky Marciano. He was a heavyweight champion of the world. And I went, no, Dad, not Rocky Marciano. He said, Rocky Graciano. I think he was middleweight. I said, no, Dad, wasn't Rocky Graciano. He said, well, Anetola, he never called me Carol. Who was it? And I went, Dad, it's about a boxer named Rocky Balboa. He said, Rocky Balboa? Never heard of him. Do the film anyway. And that's how it came about for me. And we went to see a rough cut, and there was another song in it that Frank Stallone had written. And it's a long, involved story of how that song got out of the film. And Bill Conti and Robbins, myself, and the director, which was John Avildsen, who went on to win the Oscar, came to my home, and Bill sat down at my piano that had been a gift from one of my wonderful boyfriends, David Jansen, with the beautiful ribbon on it when we were going together. And he sat down at it, and he went, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba- And I went, what? And everybody laughed. And I went into the shower. And remember, we had just seen a rough cut. So we saw him running. We saw him hitting the beef. We saw him going up the steps and putting his arms up. But no sound effects and no music. So if I were to throw you a punch, Ronnie, you would not hear the punch. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
No sound effects, no music. Because that's what we were there for, was to look at the film. And I said, oh my gosh, I know what it's about. So I called up Bill, and I was in the shower. Now, I told this story at a thing where Bill was being honored, and he agreed with me. He remembered this going down. And I said, Bill, I know what the song's about. And he said, Carol, where are you? And I went, I'm in the shower. He said, you're in the shower? Are you with somebody? I went, Bill, if I was with somebody, I wouldn't be calling you. He said, Carol, do me a favor. Give me the words before you electrocute yourself. And that was the title, Gonna Fly Now. Because at that moment in time, Rocky could win. He could go the distance. When he put his arms up, he could fly. He could do anything that any of us, if we set our minds to do, can do. Gonna fly now.
Gonna Fly Now, the theme from Rocky. And I don't think we even mentioned who the star of that movie was. It happened to be an unknown by the name of Sylvester Stallone.
Hey, you're Rocky. You're Adrian.
Yeah.
I did that for Sly the other day. We were both in the thing.
If I remember now, I saw the film Rocky. He didn't win the fight, but he went the distance.
You're right. He did not win the fight, but he went the distance.
So,
and he could fly. Because he put his mind to it.
Absolutely.
And it was just a remarkable film about hope and courage and believing in yourself. Here's a little trivia that I'm sure your listeners will love. MGM wanted that film to be a vehicle for Ryan O'Neill, and Sly refused to sell it. He wrote the screenplay, and this was his Rocky. He was going to star in this film, and he needed the money. He was as poor as a church mouse, and they had a baby. He was married to Sasha at the time. He refused to sell the screenplay, that I will not do it unless I star in it.
We're going to move right now to a song by Billy Preston and Sarita. Sarita was married at one point, I remember, to Stevie Wonder. And the song is called With You, I'm Born Again.
This is, for me, one of the most important songs that I've ever written. I wrote it for the love I had for Robert Culp, my ex-boyfriend of I Spy fame, and I wanted him to feel that way about me. And he did. And I felt that way about him. And the whole song came to me. Sometimes I really believe that there is a socket way up there in God's country, and God allows you to plug in for a very few seconds in time, a moment in time. And 20 seems to be an interesting number for me. I wrote that in 20 minutes, sitting on my bed. As I'm telling you it now, I can still see myself writing the words and writing so quickly because I thought, I have to remember all this, I have to remember all this. And the whole idea came to me. It was like an enormous epiphany. The whole thing came to me except for two words, and they took 2.5 weeks for me to come up with them.
What were the two words?
Well, the last verse goes, come show me your kindness in your arms. I know all, da-da. The words were, find this. The two easiest words. Walked into Clancy Muldoon's ice cream parlor and said, give me an ice cream, a pencil, and find this. And the lady said, what? And it's like all of a sudden the light went off. The words were, find this. Of course, so obvious. Come show me your kindness in your arms. I know I'll find this. And yet it eluded me for 2.5 weeks.
Come bring me your softness. Comfort me through all this madness. Woman, don't you know with you, I'm born again.
Come give me your sweetness, now that you bear is no weakness. Lying safe within your arms, I'm born again.
I was half, not whole, instead with none.
Reaching through this world in need of one.
Come show me your kindness. In your arms I know I'll find this. Woman, don't you know with you, I'm born again. Lying safe with you, I'm born again.
With You, I'm Born Again, Billy Preston and Sarita, and you did have a co-writer on that.
Yes, the wonderful, wonderful, talented David Shire, who wrote the arrangement, by the way. There is no drums, no nothing in the first 45 seconds of the song, if I'm not mistaken. It was done rubato. David Shire, he went on to win the Oscar for Norma Rae, It Goes As It Goes.
Beautiful song. I'm Ronnie Allen, talking with Carol Connors. Champagne Wishes and Caviar Dreams. Dionne Warwick recorded this song. Did you write this by yourself?
No, I did not write it by myself. It was from Robin Leach's Lifestyles of the Rich and Boring.
Famous.
No, I wrote it with Albert Hammond, and Dionne wrote some of it also, and the late Grover Washington plays on it.
Great musician.
And it all came about because I was at a Victoria Principal tennis tournament at Macosta, and Robin Leach was covering it. And I went up to Robin and I said, do you have a song for your show? And he said, no. And I said, well, you really should. And he said, fine. fine, write it. I went, you know something, Robin, I just might. I mean, it was like throwing down the gauntlet, similar to what Carol Shelby did. And I went home and I sketched it out, and we wrote it, took it to Dion. She was so hot at the time and such a remarkable artist, and she loved it.
When the time is right, you know, and the deal starts to show, there's magic everywhere, and love is in the air. It's the lifestyle where the neighbors don't display. It's the lifestyle. It's the dream that's far away, full of champagne wishes and caviar
Champagne Wishes and Caviar Dreams, performed so well by Dionne Warwick and co-written, of course, by Carol Connors, or CC, if you prefer. You want to start calling me RA, you can do that if you want. Some people call me some other things, but we won't get to that. Gonna move right along now to Unconditional Love, Unconditionally. This is sung by you.
I brought up Jimmy Haskell's name earlier. Jimmy and I did a song for a project called Bob Hope Presents Morris the Cat Salutes to America's Pets. It was produced by a girlfriend of mine whose father was the president of ABC. He was one of the pioneers of television, which was Leonard Goldenson. Her name is Lorene Arbus. And she hired me with Helene Swerdlow to do this project, and Bob Hope's daughter, Linda Hope, produced it. And they hired Jimmy Haskell and myself. We were nominated for an Emmy. I've been up for 5 of them. I never won one. I'm the Susan Lucci of the music industry. And we did the song. And then I own Abyssinian cats. When I was very, very poor, I saw the most beautiful cat I had ever seen in my life on a dock on a bay, which I wish I would have written, and I said, "What is that?" to the owner. I thought it was a wild cat at first, and he said, "It's an Abyssinian." And I went, "What's that?" And he said, "They're very rare, they're very expensive." And I said to myself, "If ever I make any money, I'm going to have an Abyssinian." And this song was in tribute to the Abyssinian that passed away. I wrote this because of that kitty cat. I wrote it with a friend of mine. I did all the music. We collaborated on lyric, Mark Siegel, and it ended up to become the theme song for PetSmart Charities.
Unconditional love, someone who appreciates me. Unconditional love, just my shadow in me. We go everywhere, his love's always there for me. Unconditional love,
that was Unconditional Love, Unconditionally, and that was Carol Connors.
And that is what our little animals, our little furry friends, I call them, that is what they give us. I mean, my two boys, music and lyrics, think I'm Elizabeth Taylor in a bathrobe every morning.
Yeah.
They just love me. That's it. Unconditional Love, Unconditionally.
We're going to move right along now to a song called Knockout. And when you first made me aware of the song Knockout, I thought it had something to do with Rocky, but it doesn't have anything to do with Mr. Balboa.
Nope, it doesn't. What it is there's a young girl that is absolutely a knockout. She's lucky number 13, which is my lucky number. Her name is Leila Malani. She's gorgeous. She's on Howie Mandel's Deal or No Deal. I'd love to give her website, www.leilamalani.
www.leilamalani.com.
Right. We became friends over a couple things that we did, and one of my writing partners, Eddie Wiesner, who's from Nashville, so talented, so creative, we wrote the song together for her, and he produced it, and it's going to be coming out with her, and her name is Leila Malani, and she totally is a knockout.
Always number 13 on Deal or No Deal.
They never changed their number. Yeah. Well, that's how we became such good friends. For my birthday last year, I had a big birthday party at Spago, which is one of the places in town. She brought me a little suitcase, and it says 13 on it, because that's our lucky number.
Did you open the suitcase and find $1 million in it?
She was so smart, she put one of those make-believe $1 billion.
Oh, forget $1 million.
Thanks
a lot. $1 billion, yes.
You know.
Okay. We're going to move to a song right now by the Ripcords, and this was done recently. Did the Ripcords stay together all these years?
Well, the main Ripcord is Richie Rodkin, who was the main Ripcord, and then there's Mitch Schechter, and I think there's three other members, and they're all the Ripcords, and they tour, and they do wonderful things. They do a lot of the different shows, surf shows and the hot rod shows and all that, and the great story about Surf City Ain't No City, it's the whole South Bay. There's a major controversy out here about where surfing started. Major, major, as Victoria Beckham would say, and I'm the dolphin lady, so I have to give my dolphin call now because we're talking about surfing and water. So are you ready for it, Ronnie?
I think so.
Here it comes. That's my dolphin call. So Russ Lesser, who is the president of Body Glove, which is the company that sponsors Barbie and myself, we're both Little Mermaids.
You're referring to Barbie Benton.
Yes. We were honored with Jean-Michel Cousteau 2 years ago by Reef Check for helping to save the reefs. He is a surfing aficionado. He's a water baby. And he, diving with Barbie in Kona and Fiji, we were on the cover of magazines, blah, 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 blah. One day he called me, comes up with ideas on his bicycles. Carol, I have this idea. There's such a controversy out here. It's really a bummer. Santa Cruz says surfing started there, and this one says here, and Manhattan Beach, and Hermosa Beach, or Redondo Beach. He said, I want to write a song about it. And I said, well, then do it. I threw down the gauntlet to him. He wrote this concept out. He came over to my home, and I didn't even know all these, Duke Kahanamoko, and all these people that are legends of surfing, and we wrote the song. It was his concept. Came up with the breakdown. Hang ten with the Beach Boys to bring it up into the modern day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the song is coming out by the Ripcords. It's also part of another project called 100 Years of Surfing. It's also been a project with that.
I'm not a surfing person. I wouldn't know the difference between hang 10, hang 7, and hang 52.
Well, hang 10 means it's your toes. There are five on each foot.
Thanks for that explanation.
They use. And I love the film Surf's Up, by the way. I vote in the Academy because I've been up for 2 Oscars.
Right.
And the bottom line is I voted for Surf's Up as best animated. I can say it now. If I said it earlier, they'd throw me out of the Academy. It didn't win. Ratatouille won.
Ratatouille.
But my favorite was Surf's Up.
The Ripcords and Surf City Ain't No City. It's the whole South Bay. And we'll talk about 2 more songs. Only the Music, Only My Song. Is there a Sinatra connection to this one?
Yes. In my mind, there are 3 people that changed the ears of music. Frank Sinatra, Elvis Presley, who was my first love, and of course, the Beatles. And Sinatra, in one of the last interviews he ever gave, spoke of me as a songwriter. He loved the songwriter. He respected the songwriter. He always gave us credit in his shows and when he would talk about the magic that the song was. And of course, nobody could interpret a lyric like Sinatra. When he passed away, I wrote this. I wrote all the music and co-wrote it with my friend Paul Weston Wogan. And in my mind, it is probably one of the most important songs I have ever written, because it's not only me, it was a tribute to him because he loved the songwriter, but it's also in its own way rocky-ish, not in its tempo or anything, but because it means that no matter what you do in your life, if you believe in what you do, your life has meaning.
Back at me, and know when to be quiet, when to keep me company. The nights don't seem so long as they weave their melody, and every note becomes a part of me. Call me the music, only my song. They'll be there long after I'm gone. Only the music, only my song. A friend, after all, my friends have gone.
Only the music, only my song, Carol Connors. You mentioned Elvis was your boyfriend.
He was my first boyfriend. Phil wrote "To Know Him Is to Love Him" for my voice. Elvis Presley fell in love with my voice on "To Know Him Is to Love Him." And years later, I was brought up to his home on Bellagio. That's where he was living. He had already met Priscilla. They had not gotten married. He had just finished Viva Las Vegas, Viva Las Vegas, with Ann Margaret. And we started to go together. And I remember my first impression of Elvis. When I first met him, I was taken to the house by a friend, and I was introduced to him. His first words were, "Oh, why'd you name the group the Teddy Bears?" And I said, "Because we all were in love with your song, Just Want to Be Your Teddy Bear. Just Want to Be Your Teddy Bear." Now, this is the part that your audience must visualize. He was so beautiful and so fluent in his movement and so exquisite that it was like watching a beautiful giant cat. That was my impression. Not like he was stalking me because we were in his own home, but he would walk away and he would do something and then he'd come back like this beautiful cat, almost like he was playing with me in a sense. He was a total gentleman. He thought I was so funny. He thought I had a great sense of humor. And I remember when he called, I was living at home, and he called the house, and my mother answered the phone. Now remember, she called me Annette, and the phone rang. Ring, ring, ring. My mother answered, "Hello?" And this voice said whatever, and my mother said, "Annette, there's an Elvis Presley on the phone for you." And I went with him for about 9 months on and off.
I want to mention what your website is.
www.carolconnors.com. But you must spell it correctly. CarolConnors.
The second O is the most important, right?
Well, don't spell it the other way, trust me.
Carol, thank you so very much. We're going to close right now with a song called "A Love Until the End of Time."
Well, this is probably one of the most remarkable songs for me because my mother loved opera. She She was supposed to study in the Warsaw Conservatory of Music Opera, and she used to sing me when I was a child all the different arias from Madame Butterfly and Carmen, etc., etc. So I was weaned on opera, classical music, and rock and roll. And to be able to have one of the greatest tenors of all time, Plácido Domingo, accept the song that I wrote with Lee Aldridge and do it as a duet with Maureen McGovern, who went on to record other songs of mine, is to me one of the most lovely moments that I have had in music.
Good night, Carol.
Good night, Ronnie. Thank you. And good night, all you wonderful listeners.
I love you with a heart that knows no when but you, a love I never thought I'd find,
a love that comes just once and never comes again, a love until the end of time.
That's the show. And normally, what I would be saying here is, right now, we're going to hear a couple of bonus tracks. Well, you are going to hear a couple of bonus tracks, but first, I have something extra just for you. A bonus interview segment. There were some portions of the interview which were very important to both Carol and myself, but due to the constraints of a one-hour show, I couldn't include them within the radio broadcast. However, I am going to include them on this archive file. I'm also going to play one additional bonus song. Okay, all you listeners in Internet land, once again, here's Ronnie and Carol. I understand, Carol, that you are a dolphin lady on YouTube.
I'm Victoria Beckham's Dolphin Call Lady. If you want to go to YouTube, just put in either Victoria Beckham, Dolphin Call Lady, Carol Connors, and you will hear and see some funny videos coming to America. They'll understand.
The
videos are so cute.
But the videos
really
are cute. You got to watch. Speaking of dolphins, Carol wrote the theme song for the Dolphin Research Center. By the way, the Research Center helps children with special needs, medical conditions, or emotional concerns. Right now, let's take a listen to that song. The dolphins are coming. Let the magic begin.
Hope is just around the bend. Open up your heart. From within, say goodbye to sleepless nights, of restless dreams that end in fright. Pleasant dreams and sleep tight, and dream of a magic ride about to begin, where the sun always shines on your circle of friends. The dolphins are coming. Oh, will they come?
the magic begin. The dolphins are just round the bend. Let the magic begin. 'Cause the dolphins are coming, my friend. Dolphins are coming, the world is humming, let the magic begin.
Video of To Know Him Is To Love Him is on YouTube, and that's a great video of you doing that song on the Perry Como Show, is that?
The Perry Como Show.
You were nominated for 2 Oscars, right?
Yes.
Now, we know what the first one was. That was for
right.
the theme from Rocky. What was the winning song that year? What song beat you out?
Well, that year, the best story of all was the late Henry Mancini was sitting next to me, and he patted me on the hand, and we were winning against the other film, which I'm going to tell you in a minute. And he said, oh, my God, Carol, you're going to win the Oscar the first time out. You're going to win the Oscar. And I went, no. And then Barbra Streisand got up to sing, and Henry Mancini patted my hand and said, you know, Carol, you just lost the Oscar. It was Evergreen by Paul Williams and Barbra Streisand. And then it was A Star Is Born.
Yes.
C'est la vie.
I think it helped a little bit that she was in that film. And
that
whole thing.
Too.
That helped.
The only song she ever wrote
just
in her life. My second Academy Award nomination was for Walt Disney's The Rescuers. I did all the songs, did most of the music on most of them, co-wrote with Anne Robbins, and also the last one with Sammy Fain. And the interesting thing is, after it became nominated for an Oscar, of course, we lost to the most important song ever written in the time, in the history of music for film. You light up my life. Debbie Boone.
Joe Brooks wrote that song, I remember.
Great song.
You wanted to mention a little bit more about Barbie Benton.
Well, Barbie is my best friend. In fact, she's been on The Girls Next Door quite a bit with Hef. She was the great love of Hefner's life, and this is what Hef once told me about Barbie. He said, Carol, she is the singularly most intense romantic relationship of my life, and she's also my dive buddy, and we have more fun. We're like oil and water, night and day. She is so pragmatic. What will take me 1 minute will take Barbie 1 hour, but you always dive with a partner,
right.
Dive buddy. So he assigns 2 master scuba divers.
Oh, wow.
So that are literally master divers to dive with us.
Right.
So we each have our master diver. We are great dive buddies, but Russ Lesser is so smart because we're both tiny and everything. He won't let us be our own.
Barbie was a successful singer at one time on the country music chart.
She was on Hee Haw. They had a big reunion, and she's mm-hmm. just absolutely gorgeous. Even to this day, she's just beautiful. And I think they're doing a segment soon, if the people watch, of Girls Next Door. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going up to her mansion in Aspen to film it. I did want to say that I did own a Cobra.
You did own a Cobra?
Yeah, I owned it after the record became such a hit and everything. I did get a Cobra. I had 3 of them in all. If they go to my website, you can see some pictures of it. The first, I don't have it anymore. And I met the man in engine number 2544 who bought it. And there's a big plaque, and I had to sign the car. And it says Carol Connors co-wrote the song. And, of course, I wanted to take the car and run away with it. It's worth $780,000 today. And I don't own it. Carol's personal Cobra. There were only two built. One of them was totally destroyed. He had the other one. Just went on the auction block, and it sold for $5 million.
I scribbled a note here about General Jones, and I forget what
Oh, yes. General Jones, General James L. Jones, who was the Commandant of the Marine Corps. Semper Fi, Semper Fi. I sang at the Iwo Jima Memorial, America the Beautiful, a cappella. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies. He then went on to become the Supreme Allied Commander of Europe and is now the emissary between the Israelis and the Palestinians. He said to me when he heard that I sang To Know Him Is to Love Him, he was so blown away because he said that he had his first kiss to that song. This is General Jones, who is like John Wayne or Clint Eastwood. And then Dennis Tito, who was the first man to go into space, a civilian. He was at a dinner party with me 2 weeks ago at Michael Kazanjian gave, and he came up to me after I sang it, and he went, oh my gosh, I kissed my first girlfriend to that song. So I guess my song or my voice had a lot of kissing going on.
A lot of kissing going on, huh? Is that something that Jerry Lee Lewis ever did? Oh, forget it. Anyway, that's the end of the bonus interview segment. And now, a couple of bonus tracks. First, the complete recording of the single by the Teddy Bears called O.Y. Finally, here's a song written by Carol Connors and Eddie Reasoner, performed by Model Number 13 on Deal or No Deal. Boy, I wish I could get on that show. Layla Milani. The song is called Madonna in the Mirror.